Got a great show. Got a fun show today. Renowned Montana sculptor Jim Dolan. He's left his metal mark in a lot of places across the state of Montana. You most surely recognize some of his work. If you've ever been down Highway 287, this is north of Three Forks, and you look over to the west, there's 39 blue horse sculptures. Yep, Jim did that. What else is he doing? He's done a ton of stuff. We are live from his workshop today. Why? Jim's got a new project going on here. It's sort of the genesis, the unveiling of it. Once again, it's a project that you would most surely recognize out there on the landscapes of Montana. We'll talk about that. It's going to focus on mental health. We've got actually quite a crew here already this morning.
Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com.
Yeah, we are live at the workshop of Jim Dolan. Like I said, there's probably a lot more people in here today than there normally is. Clint Lesh is here. He's a partner with Jim and an artist as well. Jason DeShaw, a friend and also son-in-law of Jim Dolan. Courtney Kibblewhite, vice president for Northern Broadcasting, but here also on behalf of Beyond the Weather as well and co-hosting this program. And Jim Dolan, the artist of the hour. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing great. Sun's out. It's beautiful.
I couldn't tell. thank God it is shining.
Yeah, it is shining pretty bright right now.
It's cold. It's a cold one. Courtney, good morning.
Good morning. It's so exciting to be here. You know, I drove from Huntley, which was 24 below when I left, drove through Big Timber, 32 below, and then here we are in Belgrade and have the moon all the way. So a great morning and great to arrive to a place with a rather iconic, I don't know, what do you call out front, Jim? We've got the monkey and the motorcycle. Yeah. What do you call that sculpture?
I call him Clyde for the movie Any Which Way But Loose.
Okay.
You know, he's been there since 91. Uh-huh. My kids and I built him back in 91, and It's a motorcycle. It's a two wreck motorcycles put together, and then they have a 6 foot tall orangutan pulling a wheelie, giving you the peace signs with a big grin. And that's my entrance into my place.
It's pretty iconic.
Yeah, it scares a few people off.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah,
you know.
That's good.
And they
fun,
weren't buyers anyway.
Fun contrast. You see this this kind of funny Clyde, and then you walk in and see these beautiful three buckskins jumping over a truck and many other sculptures here. So, Jim, we have many of us driven by the blue horses in Three Forks, and we know you from that. Other people, it's the geese in the airport. Tell us, how did you get your start? How did you get your start in art?
Well, I knew I could draw as a young age. I really didn't take any formal art training up till now, which is probably good or bad, depends on how the sculpture comes out. It would have been different if I had art training. And I say good or bad, better or worse.
You'd have never been an artist if you had art training.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah.
You know, but I end up through high school, I could draw. Then in college, I graduated in agriculture. But the welding labs had a building and had all kinds of materials, so I can go there and actually do my sculpture when I was in college at the welding labs at Montana State. And so that really helped me to have a place to go and equipment to do with and all kinds of materials to play with. So, and most of it was small pieces. It wasn't big sculpture. But it was fun. So I decided that halfway through college, I really wanted to be a sculptor more than I wanted to work for USDA or go back to the ranch. So,
and at what point did you realize, I can actually make a living at this?
I think my dad was always pretty conservative. And he would say, geez, Jim, that's really nice, but when are you going to get a job?
When are you going to get a real job, right?
Yeah. And the one year I did the geese at the airport, we had kind of a poor cow year. And so we end up, I made the ranch payments off the artwork. And my dad quit saying, when do you get a job?
How old were you at that point?
I was probably 23.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, 24, something like right in there. So I've been sculpting now full-time for over 50 years.
The point when you, and I asked this earlier, the point when you, and you brought up Van Gogh, which is really artful, by the way.
Yeah.
When you recognize that you were an artist, when you might have liked to play with metal, you might have had some ideas, you could draw, but when did you recognize that that I'm a sculptor, that I'm an artist? I mean,
I think it's when you start. I think I've always kind of been an artist, but to realize you could make a living at it. This is back in the early 70s in Montana. And I don't say it was harder then, but it was a lot less, it was a lot harder to be an artist back then, artist that made a living at it. But I just, when I quit driving the school bus, which paid all my heavy expenses at $132.48 a month.
There are artists out there right now hearing that going, I'm still driving a school bus. That's okay then,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. When I dropped the school bus, then I realized, okay, this is it. You can do it. And so I just kept with it. And, you know, it just I think it's worth it. You never quit. You just say, I'm not going
to
quit.
I have to ask that question of Jason and Clint as well. Go ahead and turn those mics on. Yeah. I know I've got a lot to focus on here, Jim. We want to talk about a project as well. Jason, I did not know that you were, the son-in-law of Jim. So I'm glad that you're here and we have a chance to catch up as well. Talk about when you recognized that you were an artist as well.
Well, I worked all through college to... paid tuition, and anyway, the last job I held there was as desk supervisor for the girls' dorm, and I would write songs and sing them at the front desk there where I worked, and it was wonderful. I didn't think life could get better. Then I missed a meeting, I got fired, and a friend of mine said, let's throw a concert. And with that concert, I made more money than I'd made all that year.
Ah!
But it was something to sit in that theater on that stage and realize that I had something to give.
Yeah, Clint Lesh. Now you have kind of come under his wing, Jim Dolan's wing, for a while here, but now you're out there. I see this huge jackalope up there. Saddle up the jackalope, talk about your journey as well, and maybe how Jim has influenced you.
Yeah, so I went to MSU for agricultural business and then switched to art, actually. And right as I was graduating, one of our mutual friends brought me out here, and Jim was working on a big project, and he's like, "Well, I just need some help. So if you want to come out and learn to weld and help out, that'd be great." So probably for about a year, I was doing that, and slowly started building my own projects. And Jim letting me work in his studio has really fast-forwarded my artist career, and forever will be thankful for that.
Fortunate for that. Yeah. One day you're a welder, and then the next day you're an artist, so to speak. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Jim, and thank you again for having us here. We have to talk about the most recognizable piece of art, I think, that people know. And because it's out there and everybody, I don't know, anybody who's in Montana has probably hit that road from Bozeman to Helena, 287. You've got 39 blue horses. As many times as I have seen it in my lifetime, I still appreciate seeing it. And if I'm not paying attention, I come over that hill and I still think they're moving. I still get caught by surprise. A credit to your artwork there. Talk about that project.
Well, thank you. Well, I decided that, I grew up with horses. And I decided that what I wanted to portray, this is during the recession. They've been up now for 10 years this year. I decided I wanted to do, nothing was selling. There's just the recession hit everybody. But I decided that I'm going to do a herd of horses. And I thought, okay, I'll figure out how to finance this to keep it going forward. But I thought I wanted actually a herd almost like wild horses in a sense that would be, you'd have mares and colts, foals, you'd have a couple of geldings, you'd have a group of juveniles who would always stay by themselves in a group and make it a pastoral scene where you felt really natural, like these horses belong there. So I had to make some horses ahead of time that would be on a side hill, some with butt up, some with head up the hillside, some laying down. We have a nursing foal there with a mare. and just try to make them all so you think, oh, this is how horses could be. And that's what I really wanted to get across. I think I got a lot of good compliments that from horse people said, you got them right. And that was like when we left my studio, we had flatbed trailers full of horses. So we got over there. I had friends with, you know, put all these in the ground. And I just sat there and pointed out where we want to put the horses. And we never moved them. We made them the first time around. It worked perfect.
See, I could swear that you were out there moving them. Because they seem like they're in different places every other time.
So I have to ask, and I've driven by many times, and I've never actually stopped to study. So is there a stud in the herd?
No, not really.
Okay.
I mean, I have a group of juveniles. I think most of them were geldings or males. But no, I didn't want to make – and some of the horses are 7-foot of shoulders. They're pretty good size. Mm-hmm. Horses, and I made them purposely on the thin side because I think of, you know, these being wild horses, you know, they have breakfast at Huntley, then they have, you know, lunch somewhere north of Jordan.
Right.
So I wanted them to be on the thin side, and they have shown that. We had one gal a couple years ago, not from around here, but she called the sheriff. Won the sheriff's number because somebody's been starving horses up there, and I guess that's a true story. So, but we've had they've been fun. I go up, not this winter too much, but I'll go up in straight manes. All the manes and tails are poly rope, black poly rope, so you get the wind off those. And a couple of them, I started moving their heads. They're on bearings, so their head and necks move on some of them for the wind. So it does catch you a little bit. All of a sudden, a couple of them move, and you go like, they're moving. You know, and it really is happening. It's not just Jim playing some game on you.
Good. Honestly, I thought I was going crazy.
So I have to ask, why the location? What did you set out to have that specific location, or how did that come about?
Well, no, I had another location in mind. And I couldn't deal with the landowner very well, which is understandable. It's his place. Mm-hmm. But I was having coffee with Dean Folkford down in Wheat, Montana. And Dean owned this land. He says, well, go look at, you know, up here on the hill. He says, my land's your land. You can do what you want with it. So I found this location. I thought, this is perfect. Except I like to move it like maybe 100 feet closer to the highway. But they're really good where they're at.
Yeah.
And so we put them there, and we have, you know, shake agreement that we can have the horses there, so we put them right there, and they have a perfect spot.
Well, I think it is just an amazing sculpture, but also like a symbol of gratitude, because Jim donated that herd of blue horses to the people of Montana for supporting him all these years.
Yeah, don't steal them, because they're yours. Leave them there.
Yeah. Well, isn't there a story nice about theft?
Yeah, somebody actually stole three of them, and you know, some goof off guy, and that's all. I won't name him, but I end up that worked out when we got him back. But it made such a good news article. It made five papers in Europe. It made Salt Lake, Seattle, the San Francisco. I think it was the Chronicle. All the story of the horses being stolen in Montana. And that was pretty cool. I first saw Dean afterwards, Folkford, and I said, Dean, have you arranged to have his horses stolen? You know, he says, I thought you did it. So both of them think the other guy did it for the publicity, but we didn't. But we got him back and put him back up in the hillside, and it worked out good.
Well, we want to talk about a project that you're launching into here. We'll do that when we come on back. But I also want to get more about, because you've done a lot of pieces. And there's as I look around the shop and the yard here, there's just a ton of things that represent the values, I think, of the people of Montana in a lot of ways. So we'll take this first break and come on back with more. We are live this morning from the workshop of Montana sculptor Jim Dolan. We'll talk about a project that he's launching, as I mentioned, in just a bit. And come on back with more of some of your favorite pieces, Jim. I want you to focus on what moved you forward as an artist as well in all those many years. Back with more. It's From Montana, for Montana, Voices of Montana. Welcome back, and good to have you joining us here. Tom Schultz alongside. We're live at the studio. Jim Dolan, he's Montana's sculptor. We talked about the blue horses, but there's a lot of things that you probably recognize around the state of Montana, but not sure exactly where they came from. They came from this studio. Welcome back again. Courtney Kibblewhite is with us here. We'll talk about a project here in this segment and maybe beyond as well that Jim is launching into. Jason Deshaw, a country artist as well, and son-in-law, and then Clint Lesh is now a partner in this studio and in the artwork as well, and does some of his own work. I mean, and these things are not small, Jim. Whenever you're working with metal, it's huge, and they make a presentation. I want to ask you, before we get into these phone booths and what they mean and what they symbolize, like some of your favorite pieces. Go ahead. Okay. Yeah.
I think I'll start out with my biggest piece is over in Osaka, Japan. It's an eagle, like a big imperial eagle, and it's 27 feet tall with a 36-foot wingspan. What? And I made that all in my little studio where they had like a oversized two-car garage. And people, how do you do it? So, well, parts is parts, you know. You make a little part. You know, we had to assemble it twice here before we shipped it to Japan to make sure we didn't make two left wings.
Right.
So yeah. Make sure it fit. Then I went over to Japan. I did quite a bit of work in Japan. Going over there, from here, shipping things over. But this one's like a 40-foot container, and we just took parts and shoved them in there and tied them all together. And months later, flew to Japan, and we put it up downtown Osaka.
Why was that one of your favorite pieces? What did it mean to you?
I think it was a challenge because, you know, my old studio was 7-foot doors and 8-foot ceilings, and your wing sections were at 30 feet each because I had the support stuff. So trying to work that in and out and make sure it comes out right, that was a challenge.
Is that one of those pieces that, like, moved you along as an artist? Or when you look back, when did you recognize that I'm a better artist now than I was even, you know, a year ago?
I think when I got a little more diversified, I was doing, you know, a lot of birds, and I still do some, but it's more mammals now, a lot of horses. And I think once you made that jump, and it's easier for make a horse with some feelings. I mean, you make a duck, it's flying. Okay, you bank it sideways so you get a good view of it. But you could take a horse and you could just turn the head just a little bit and get a completely different feeling out of that horse. You can't do that with a duck. So it's more the horses. And I love doing that because one of my favorite pieces is out in Bend, Oregon, where it's a horse on top of a piano, big grand piano, and the horse paws are over the keys and has that little kick in the head like I'm listening to Frank Sinatra or something like that. So it was fun.
Clint Lesh, I'm going to have you turn your mic on because I got to ask you now. Working underneath Jim, and when you he talks about a 27 foot tall sculpture that's 30 feet wide and things like that. How does that inspire you as a young artist?
It just shows me that it's possible, and Jim's been doing it for so long that, you know, when you grow up, you're like, a lot of artists don't really make it, and it's a dangerous field to get into. But seeing Jim do it for so long and so inspiring.
Nice. Let's move on to this project here, too. I mean, there's still more stuff to talk about because I think your life is full of these kinds of art pieces that they mean something, I think, significant to you and probably to all of us as well, something different, too. This, what, Courtney?
Well, I was just thinking, I think about the amount of time that you spend on one of these pieces. It's not like, you know, I check it off my to-do list today and move on to the next one. When you decide to launch into a project, is that months? Is that years of your life?
Yes, it really is.
Yes.
So, we have a project out back, this buffalo project, which is 111, bigger than life-size buffalo, 111, which is a lot. And it was a 7.5-year project. So I was working on it almost. I had to make other sculptures to pay for this, to get this project done. I thought, I wanted this herd of buffalo. And when I got to 35, I said, okay, this isn't a herd. This is a group. This is a, you know, flock of buffalo. It's not a herd. And we got to 101, and we thought about stopping there. I said, well, now we're going to compete with Disney for the Dalmatians. I don't want to do that. I thought, well, no one will do 111. So I did 111, and Clint helped me with the last part of it. And I had him go out and count them a couple of times. He's really late coming back in counting them. He said, Jim, we don't have 111. By then, I was kind of over him.
Right. Yeah.
So he said, we have 113. So I tell people now we have two extra ones in case someone in the herd, you know, breaks a leg or tests positive for brucellosis. We got them covered. We could put a substitute right in there.
Good thinking. Jason.
Well, yeah, that buffalo rising, 111 buffalo, like there's nothing else in the world like it. And I was just going to say one of my favorite things that Jim says is when somebody looks at a sculpture and points to it and asks, how long did it take to make that? Jim usually says 50 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
So talk to us about the origin of the project that brings us here today.
Well, I look at the state of Montana, and this project is going to, the concept is going Eastern Montana right now, because I think there's more of a need there. It's with mental health issues. And we have a large part of this population which is isolated, that doesn't have maybe or doesn't know how to get to get help, or maybe is too embarrassed to, or whatever. But what I'm doing is telephone booths. I'm making telephone booths and putting they're all from scratch. There's a homemade phone in them, but what I want to do, and across there's logo across the top of it says call home, the other one says keep in touch. Well, I want to place these across Eastern Montana. And the first one is going to go to Ringling, because I have friends there that could use it.
Oh, nice.
But my idea is maybe this would prompt people to make a connection, to call home. These aren't memorials to people who committed suicide. These are for the people that survived the suicide victims. And so they have a place. It might just remind them, hey, I got to call. I need to call a counselor. I need to call my family. I need to call somebody. I need to reach out and keep in contact, because it's too easy to be isolated and not, and all of a sudden you're in deep stuff before you know it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm working on now. And so we just got the program going. We haven't placed any telephone booths yet, but we're going to need some sponsors down the road. But right now we're just in the process of trying to formalize how we're going to make this work. It's not going to be a memorial to people who've left us. It's going to be a memorial to a fixture, a way that people who have someone who died, they can actually maybe see something physical besides a counselor visiting with them. See a physical project which addresses their issues.
So basically, you're almost giving God an opportunity to give somebody a sign.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
So if you don't mind me asking, Jim, I'm curious. So many of us have some sort of story that makes mental health, or whether it's a suicide survivor. Is there something like that for you that specifically drew you to this movement?
Well, I think, Jason, he's been working with mental health issues for quite a while now. And I had one son who committed suicide back in the turn of the century, so I know I have some of those feelings that way. And you have things you have to work through.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of this series, is me putting this out to people who work their way through. When you put these phone booths out, at that point, they belong to everybody. So if you need to tie a ribbon around it, or you need to put a message inside. We're going to put some stickers inside, so I think with, the suicide hotline, things like this. But it's basically getting people aware. So you drive them down Eastern Montana, all of a sudden you're south of Jordan, and you see this phone booth out there. You're going, what's that about? Oh, that's about mental health, about helping people, or about making the contact. Well, maybe that saves somebody from wrecking his truck that
day. Ask the question, how are you doing, right? Yeah. Look, we'll come back. I got a breakup coming. But there's a number of them here in this studio already. They're not. There's one that's about fully done. And there's an ask out there that we'll get to if people want to participate in this. We'll describe these phone booths in more detail when we come on back. Live from the studios of Jim Dolan here on Voices of Montana. We're back with more in a bit.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
You know, metal is more malleable indoors than it is outdoors this time of year. Really, really cold. We're in the Bozeman area and on the road. Courtney Kibble with us. You woke up to 24 below in Huntley and then hit the road.
Yep.
We're at the welcome back. It's Voices of Montana. We're at Jim Dolan's studio here in Bozeman, Belgrade area, and just freezing cold. But we're here to talk with Jim about his art as well, but also about a project now that we're going to launch into. Jason Deshaw is with us, a country artist and a friend of the program as well. Clint Lesh is a former mentor, but now you're kind of a partner as you do some work with Jim in the studio. And Courtney, I know as you have been involved with Beyond the Weather and really launched that program as an outreach for especially the rural community, as Jim, you had noted, a lot of people are isolated out there. There's stigma still. Jason, you talk about that a lot too. Beyond the Weather was very successful. It showed that people will respond if they get a message out there. I'm going to have you lead this conversation too, and then I want people to know what they're looking at when they see some of these out there on the landscapes in eastern Montana.
Well, and Jim, I think one of the really cool things about this project is that it's a sign to people that they're not alone. And I think that's what we've been trying to do with this rural mental health movement we've called Beyond the Weather, because, you know, in agriculture, we can just focus on the weather and focus on the surface level things. And but what happens when we do that and we don't get to talking about the really hard stuff? The hard stuff can kind of be like a Coke can, you know. You have a few negative thoughts or difficult times and you shake it up and all of a sudden an explosion can happen. And we certainly don't want that. But what I'm thinking of related to Beyond the Weather and mental health is really what this is a movement of the people. You know, in eastern Montana, there's probably never going to be a mental health clinic in Ekalaka, Clint. Probably not in Sand Springs either. We just had our gas station get shut down. I don't think there's going to be a psychiatrist moving in there anytime soon. But to me, what this is about is this is something where, and we're used to this in Montana, we can help each other just by answering the phone or by calling someone else. This is something that we can help each other through these difficult times. And does that resonate with you when you think about those phone booths and what it means to either be the one calling or the one receiving a call?
Yeah, I think so, because you making that contact, is talking to somebody. You even just talk the weather with them. Just have some voice that bounces back to you, because we're all related. We're all the same.
Right.
So if we can get some rapport with someone, it could be somebody you know or they help or whatever. But I think it's imperative that you have to get out and talk to people. If you're totally isolated, you're in trouble. I don't even, you know, people who don't want to see people, and there are people like that, the isolation isn't good for them. And I think you can tell.
So, Jim, I have to ask, you know, and I've got a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old, and they don't really, I don't think they would know what a phone booth is, to be honest. They are very adverse on a cell phone. But I wonder, is this any sort of statement about our culture? I think about when I was in college when social media started, and that was a way of connecting. And now I'll be honest with you. I sort of think people think that they write you a message on your Facebook page, and it's the same as us sitting here talking and shaking hands today. And I do not think that is equal. And I'm just curious if the idea of a phone booth somehow reflects getting back to our roots and getting back to truly loving and being there for each other.
I think so. People won't recognize it, but said, like you said, you know, you have a cell phone or you have a phone booth. There's a huge difference between the two. Something that really is physical and stuff. The other one is just an extension of your fingers.
Sure.
You know, And so you can, it might just prompt you. You might be using the cell phone by looking at the booth, but the booth hopefully is the catalyst to get you to move, to make the phone call, to talk to that person you have, your classmate you haven't talked to in 6 months and see how they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Just to make that, how important that is to have somebody call you if you're having challenges.
Right.
And then maybe you start searching out, hey, maybe I do need some help. How do I do this? And I think we're going to hopefully some messaging inside the booth so you can call. The phones won't work there, so you're going to have to save your quarters for something else. But I think hopefully it'll prompt people. I don't know else. There's counselors out there, and there's, you know, clinics and all this, and they do as much as they can do. But this is a physical way of seeing something different besides a counselor. And say, hey, this is another piece of the puzzle, maybe helping, you know, the people of Montana. We have like the largest suicide rate per 100,000 in the nation. We double the next state, mm-hmm. Which I think it's Alaska or Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
So we should be working with that, because we basically have 300 people a year that commit suicide in Montana.
Mm-hmm.
And that's huge. Well, how does that affect their families or their loved ones or whatever? So this is hopefully the phone booth thing hopefully will be one more piece of that puzzle that makes it possible for you to make some connections.
And I
really liked it. I walked over here, by the way, to bang on the door on one of these booths so you guys can get an idea of how big it is. It's a structure that is going to, it's on a base that's probably about 4.5 by 4.5, probably sits up on that base maybe 16 inches, 12 inches. And so it's going to stand about 7 to 8 feet high.
Yes, about 8 feet tall.
What's that?
It's a little better over an 8 foot.
A little over 8 foot. Jason, you were saying that they're going to be solar lit there. And these are all welted. This is looks like an old rotary dial phone here, and you can put your quarters in if you got them still. What's nice about these is that people are going to have to recognize when they see this that, yes, mental health is an aspect of my life, whether I need to call somebody or somebody needs to call me. Everybody has a connection to somebody, including themselves, who could use some mental health awareness in their own lives. So these are going to be placed in, they're going to be recognizable and placed in what? This is one thing that you're looking for. Yeah. Where are good spots for people to see these and be reminded to reach out to somebody if they need help or reach out to somebody they think that may need to hear from them?
Yeah, it could be, you know, ranch land. It could be inside of a town. Is some place where people will recognize them and see them. I mean, you go across the High Line. I mean, there's some places on the highway, too. Everybody goes to Havre, Great Falls, to shop. And, you know, they see this maybe near Sleeping Buffalo or something like that.
Yeah.
They say, hey, we'll pull off and look at this. Or we have in a ranch land where someone has to step through a barbed wire fence to go look at it. I think it's important to make it so they can have access to this, but not a ride on the highway. Just a little bit off, so it's like it's still a private thing.
Yeah.
But it belongs to the people.
I really like that you're here at this point in this project, and you're asking for help, or you're starting it, and you don't know exactly where it's going to end. You just know you need to do something.
Yeah.
People can help. How can they help? One of those places is maybe, or one of those ways is maybe to find a place for this. And so we want to find a contact. But this is just getting started. I know there's a lot of things. There's sponsorship, hopefully, that can come from. Well, I love, like I say, you don't have to figure it all out. You just have to start walking in that direction. Huh?
Yep. Yeah, we don't have to have all the answers today, which we don't.
Yeah.
We just want to get them out there and to see what the response is and see how we can help people with this. That's the idea, is helping Montanans.
And I think that there are people out there who will want to help in this regard, too.
Yeah.
Well, and I'd be curious. I know that Clint has worked on this project, and Jason, of course, is a mental health advocate as well. I almost wonder, I'm curious about their take on what this will mean to people, but I almost wonder if it's a, it's also a statement about, you know, bother somebody. It's right. Okay that you drive by and you say, oh, well, I haven't seen that person in a long time, but right. I don't want to bother them. Or, you know, we had that COVID cancellation thing yeah. where no one was talking to anybody and, I could call them. I'll just text them. I don't want to bother them. But you know what? Bother. Our friends want to be bothered. We may have a bit of a, you know, cowboy culture, tough, get through it. But at the same time, we are also all about Western hospitality. And, you know, our people, homesteaders that came out here wouldn't have survived if the house they had just went by wouldn't have, you know, brought them in and fed them and played some music and all those things. So I think about just the importance of, no, make the stop. You're not putting somebody out. You're actually giving more to them with that gift of actually making a call. So Jason and Clint, I'd love to ask you guys, what do you think this project symbolizes?
Well, I'm really excited to get them out. It's a great gentle nudge to people in Eastern Montana to, you know, make the phone call. It's imperative that we stay in contact. I think these long Montana winters can really drain a lot of people. And, yeah, just talking on the phone, it's so much different than looking at social media or texting. So, yeah, I would say just stay in contact with everybody.
Jason, I want to have you share, too, and I know we're up against a break, and so maybe I should take that, but I want to have you share your recent experience as well, as you were out amongst the high schoolers in Montana, and they responded in a large way to your message there, too. So I want to say that as we come on back with more here. I'm up against this last break. We are live again from the studio of Jim Dolan. It's jimdolanart.com for more information, and you can see how many pieces have you made over the years? Like, is it?
Oh, God. I mean, it's in the thousands.
It's in the thousands. You see some of those thousands of pieces right there on that webpage too, jimdolanart.com. Back with more Voices of Montana here in just a bit. Just a few more minutes. We've got some more room to cover here, or more things to cover. Jason Deshaw is with us. Clint Lesh, also a part of this studio. Jim Dolan, it's his studio here, and we're live with Courtney Kibble-White, Tom Schultz alongside. Corrine has been alongside as well. Good morning, Corrine, and thanks for the coffee cake and the coffee. It's really great. We've got a few things to finish up on, but Jason, I wanted to have you talk about, because you and I were chatting. We went on the air a little while ago before you took off on this high school tour to talk about mental health and awareness as a country artist and a recognized country artist as your advocacy in that. And it turned out fairly well, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've made progress as a state, and especially with our youth. Like, there were hundreds of kids that waited in line after to meet me, and that didn't happen 6 years ago or five, you know. So maybe post-pandemic changed some perspective, but I mean, the one that blew me away was a dozen kids waited to meet me after the bell rang the end of the day. Like, I wouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
But I think this project that Jim is doing, I think it's a symbol that there is help and there is hope.
Yeah.
And that's what we need. And you know, that human connection, like I tell my friends, like when I get depressed, I can't even text people. It's so hard. But if somebody calls and leaves a message, it means something, you know. But Jim Dolan is a legend in everyone's mind but his own.
I appreciate you saying that, Jason. Yeah. I've always appreciated your transparency with your mental health journey. And I think that's something that we've tried to work on with this Beyond the Weather program, of just let's be honest about our stories. And I always think about if I could talk to my granddad again, I wouldn't want to hear about how great of a roper he was. I would want to hear how he got through the hard stuff. And I want to encourage everybody to be open and talking about that. And also want to let people know that that Frontier Psychiatry is continuing to offer the free counseling through the Beyond the Weather program. So if anyone needs, if counseling is something you need, obviously advocate for calling someone. It doesn't have to be a counselor. But if you need someone outside of the family, sometimes having an advocate that doesn't necessarily know your mom and dad or everybody can be helpful. And I know if you go to frontierpsychiatry.care or frontier.care, you can get 6 sessions of free counseling through that program, which is something that Beyond the Weather has worked on. And we'll continue to keep you up to date as to how you can participate in Jim Dolan's phone booth project if you're interested in hosting one of these on your locations. And the beauty of it, too, is the interpretation, the opportunity to make it your communities is something that Jim's offering to everyone. So, Jim, what would you say in these last moments?
Well, thank you, Tom and Courtney, for allowing me to come on this program. I think we got a good start on what we want to do. And it's evolving. It'll continue to evolve. I mean, 5 years from now might be totally different mm-hmm. than it is right now.
Yeah.
Maybe we won't need phone booths out there. We'll take them all, make one big phone hinge somewhere in the middle of Montana. So, yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate it, and I appreciate everyone out there who may respond or at least make a phone call after this hour's up.
You can contact
me,
Tom, at voicesofmontana.com, or you can call us at the studio as well, 252-6661. But it's easier to contact me, Tom, at voicesofmontana.com. And Jim, we're going to follow along with this as well. I mean, it's just, this is a baby step, so to speak, although there I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 six baby steps that you still got work to do on, right?
Yeah. Yep. We're in the process. So we'll just keep them going.
Thank you for what you do. It's meaningful to us all.
Our team of volunteers with Beyond the Weather is going to put a Facebook page up, and we'll get some of these phone book photos out there for you to take a look at.
See you guys tomorrow.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.